Blog Talk Radio.
Get money on, nigga!
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show? And keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level. Move with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26 saw the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What up, Jimbo? What's going on, man? How's your week going so far?
Man, everything's good, good, brother.
All right, good. That's what's up. So lace up them high tops, man, because it's game time. All right, homies and Jones, y'all are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. We're your all-star panel of hosts. We're a little short tonight. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm at the War Room Roundtable with my man, James the Blueprint Williams. Paul P. Jizzle Johnson is going to join us in a few minutes, and Akil and Brad will be back with us next week. Tonight, we're going to recap the NBA All-Star Weekend in L.A. We're going to play another round of HOF or FOH, but we're going to see if time permits that. So we'll see about that, Jim. And we're going to talk about Chasing 3000, which is a movie by writer, director, producer Greg Lanzi. It's a baseball-themed movie starring Ray Liotta. But as usual, we're going to catch you up on all the big stories in the week of sports. And, of course, we want to hear from you guys tonight. So when we open up the Digital Stream Technologies hotline, call in and tell us what's on your mind. That number is 323-410-0012. But right now, we're going to give some birthday shout-outs.
My birthday! Yay!
All right, birthdays are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon in Fort Washington, Maryland. The first birthday is one Mr. Philip Joseph McConkie, better known as Phil McConkie, wide receiver, New York Giants. Jimmy, what you think of when you think of Phil McConkie?
Yo, Phil McConkie was a scrappy player, yo. And I remember him on those Giants teams with Mark Bavaro and Dave Meggett and Phil Sims. Yo, but Phil McConkie was a very scrappy possession receiver. And, you know, he wasn't that bad.
Yeah, he was. He was definitely a possession receiver in the mold of – I was going to say like a Chris Collinsworth, but there I go, comparing white dudes to white dudes. But he wasn't nowhere near as good as Chris Collinsworth, but
not at all.
He held his own. Yo, he was pretty good.
He had a horrible mustache, though, yo. He had like a porn star mustache.
Yeah, he sure did. I think dude was like trapped in the 70s or something.
Yeah.
And the boy's last name is McConkie. Gives a McConkie.
Yeah, that's a bad last name, yo, McConkie. Like, come on, man.
He turned 54 today, so our next birthday is one Mr. Jeffrey Jason, better known as Jeff Garcia.
Birthday. Yay!
Jeff Garcia turned 41 today. What you got on Jeff Garcia?
Yo, when I think of Jeff Garcia, I think of somebody that's underappreciated, because Jeff Garcia, like, he could ball. He's another scrappy NFL player, but he got the job done. But, yo, I think he still could ball right now, even at 41. Like, yo, he's a scrappy player. He's underappreciated.
Telling me he couldn't have kept balling in Oakland with all them bums they got out there?
Yeah, that's exactly my point, though. You know what I mean? Looks like a rat. Smells like a rat.
Yeah. He was always, like, undersized for a quarterback, but he's, like, the prototypical West Coast quarterback. He didn't have, like, a big arm, but he was accurate. You know what I'm saying? He got the ball out quick. You know, Jeff, and he came to the Eagles and had the whole city clamoring for him the next year, you know, because we never gave Donovan no respect. That's a shame, but.
Did he deserve respect? That's the question. But, yeah, like, he was very, very scrappy player, and I think he was underappreciated, with, like, you know, throughout his whole tenure, like, especially when you talk about going to Oakland with those dudes they had out there.
Yeah, and he was a perfect fit for the 49ers because, you know, San Francisco, you know. But I'm a
movie. If it looks like a rat, if it smells like a rat, shout out to T.O.
All right, the next birthday is Mr. Simeon James Rice.
My birthday, yay!
Simeon Rice turns 37 today. What you got on Simeon?
Yeah, I remember Simeon Rice played for the Cardinals. He's a defensive lineman. The one thing I think of when I think of Simeon Rice, it was an article in Sports Illustrated back when he played, and it was talking about how frugal this guy was with his money and how when he got to the league, he put like a Toyota Camry instead of buying like a big luxury car and how all his teammates, instead his teammates clowned him and said, you know, because he was very frugal with his money. But I wonder, you know, those teammates that clowned him, how they feel today, because a lot of them are probably broke knowing the NFL.
Yeah, I was about to say, if he was still balling, I bet you he would survive this upcoming lockout if they have one. But
yeah.
I remember him more from his days with the Buccaneers because, you know, that's around the time when the Eagles and the Buccaneers kind of established a little rivalry. And, you know, they beat us in a championship to go on to the Super Bowl and beat the Raiders. But Simeon Rice used to always terrorize Donovan McNabb. And they knew each other. So, you know, I think they both were from Chicago. So it was one of those things where – okay, yeah. So it was one of those things where he used to hit dude hard. He'd be on the ground, and they smiling at each other because they cool. Like, come on,
man. Like, I think it was Donovan Simeon Rice and Antoine Walker all went to the same high school in Chicago.
Word. That's messed up. Two of them got chips.
Yo, anytime you get a chance to take a shot at Donovan, you got to do it, right?
So the last birthday, man, it's crazy that B. Austin ain't here for this one. But this is his man, Mr. Floyd Joy Mayweather Jr.
My birthday, yay!
So Money Mayweather.
Joy. First thing I say about him is, yo, hold on, Joy? That's his real middle name is Joy.
Yo.
You know what I mean? Like, come
yo,
on,
now,
man. Yo,
now you know why. Yo, now you know why he became a fighter. Come on, man. His
yo, you
middle
got
name
to.
Is Joy.
Your middle name being Joy, yo. And, you know, when you got Uncle Raj and your pop, like, how they name you Joy? It was on that Joy when they named him Joy.
Yeah. So, yeah, it had to be a situation like that because they two tough guys. They were already boxers, so why are they going to set him up? So maybe it was a motivational tactic, though. Like I said, when your middle name is Joy, you have to fight.
You got to rumble when your middle name is Joy. Yo, first off, when I think of Floyd, though, shout out to B. Austin, yo. I think of course, Pacquiao, the drug addict Pacquiao. And this fight that, you know, they won't make. For the life of me, I don't understand it. Like, somebody has to come in. Boxing is a dying sport. And this is the only fight that anybody wants to see. You have the pure boxing fans and pure sports fans who would enjoy, like, you know, Shane. But for the most part, this is the fight the world wants to see. They got to make it happen.
Yeah. Shane is definitely the consolation prize in this. But, yeah, same thing. These days, I mean, as good as his career has been, now when you think of Floyd Mayweather, you think of Pacquiao and vice versa. So they need to just go ahead and do that so, you know, we can stop grouping these dudes together every time we say something about them.
Yeah, and the crazy part is, like, I wonder, like, long term, because pound for pound, he has to be one of the greatest boxers of all time. But if this fight never happens, like, it seems to me like it's going to affect his legacy a lot more than
I keep thinking that it's Floyd doing the ducking. But even if the fight never happens, you know, my respect is still there for Floyd. I mean, I don't think, in my opinion, it's going to take away from him, but you're right. You know, certain people do things certain ways, so they might hold that against him. All right, but yeah, he turns 34 today, so he better hurry up and get that over with before he like 46 when they sign him the contract. So that's it for the birthdays today.
My birthday, yay!
Now, why don't you tell everybody what happened while they were on the grind?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, what happened when you were on the grind today and this week? A lot of different sports stories going on. First thing I'm going to ask you about is this 20-year-old Trevor Bayne. He's the youngest driver to ever win a Daytona 500, and he did it in his second career Sprint Cup start. Now, I know we don't have a lot of NASCAR fans, but when things like this happen, what I think of is the guys that have been doing this for decades and years and haven't been able to win. How do they feel about this 20-year-old, like, you know, his second start winning it? What's your opinion of this?
The funny thing is, you know, a lot of our fans probably going to like, the hell they know about NASCAR. And I'm going to tell y'all nothing. But, you know, I pay attention every once in a while, and I actually happen to be paying attention this week because, you know, the Daytona 500 is the biggest race in NASCAR.
Yeah.
So I was noticing, like, before the race, they kept harping on this new method of drafting where instead of a line of cars, like, going bumper to bumper, It was just two cars. So everybody in the race was kind of like pairing up with somebody and running the whole race, like bumper to bumper with somebody. And then, you know, at the end, you try to make your move to win the race. So after the race, there was a lot of complaining about this new form of restrictor plate racing because it actually caused a lot of accidents. And a lot of the guys who were expected to be, you know, front runners or even winners of this race got into accidents. So, you know, I'm not saying that's why the young kid won. You know, he ran a good run even in the qualifiers. But, you know, a lot of dudes were out of the race. And, you know, all eyes were on Dale Earnhardt Jr. because it was the anniversary of his dad's death at Daytona. But, he got into a little something early, but he got out of it and actually made some moves late. But, you know, it was too little too late.
I got a question. If anybody out there is listening or anybody online listening, and if you are a NASCAR fan, I need you to explain to me the allure of the sport. I'm going to tell you why. As many times as I try to get into it, I just can't. Like, yo, they're going in circles. Now I understand these guys are going 200 miles an hour and I just don't understand the allure of it. I don't know. Maybe I have to be born down south to get it or whatever. I just want somebody to either call in, you know, get in the chat room, let us know on Facebook, what is the allure of NASCAR? Because I just don't get it, and I try to make myself get it, but to me it's not entertaining.
Yeah, I promise myself one of these days I'm going to sit around and watch a whole NASCAR race. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it, but, I got a question.
We should go to one live, yo. Maybe if we go live, we'll appreciate it more.
Cool. What's the closest one? I think it's one in, like, Richmond. We can drive down to Richmond and see what's up. What's up with why your man Brad Daugherty, an announcer for NASCAR?
Yo, I know. Yo, he's like this thing, though. Like, it is crazy to see him, but he's like 7 foot tall.
Yeah, he's like 7 foot 14, and he announcing NASCAR. He can't even fit in a NASCAR. Get out of here.
Yo, is that a call on the line? Hold on, let me see.
It is. It's a little early for that.
Maybe they got something to say about NASCAR. Let's see.
All right, go ahead. Hold on, take that.
215-446, you know, war room, what's your name and where you calling from?
Yo, this is Mont calling out of Philly.
Yo,
Mont, what's good, homie?
What's good, fellas?
Chilling.
I watch NASCAR.
Oh,
do
you?
Like NASCAR.
Now explain to me.
Do.
I'm trying to get into it.
Here's the allure, and I'm not a NASCAR expert. The allure is that it is a chess match at 200 miles an hour. It's not exciting to watch from a standpoint of viewership. Just like if you were just to flick it on and didn't know anything about NASCAR, it's not going to be exciting because it just looks like cars going in a circle. But the more you watch it, the more you find out the strategies that are going on, the more appealing it becomes. I can't sit and watch 2 hours of it. I can watch it for a half an hour at a time. Yeah, you can watch like 50 laps at a time and then turn the channel and then come back and see what's going on. I can do that. But it's very strategic. It's extremely strategic.
Okay.
When to change tires, when to go in for fuel, when to pair up with somebody that's on your team or that's not on your team to help you get ahead. So it's a whole lot of strategy going on, and it's all going on at 186 miles an hour.
Have you ever
so
been
to an
event?
Feel. Nah, but I plan to go soon. I'm going this year up to Pocono Raceway.
How'd you get into it?
I got into it because it was nothing on one Saturday. Like, it was nothing else on that I wanted to watch. And I'm the type of person that I don't like not knowing stuff. So I'm like, all right, let me check this out. And the more I watched, the more I got into it, the more I could see what was going on. Then I went online and, you know, I started researching stuff, trying to find out a little bit about the sport. And there's a whole lot going on. Makes you learn more about cars, too. Because, I mean, the car can change from day to day, from hour to hour. The track heats up, and that affects road conditions. And some people tune their cars to run better later in the game. Some people tune their cars to run better in the start of the game so that they get more laps. Because it's not really just about winning the race. It's more about the points that you acquire throughout the season.
Yeah, I do know.
So you can go the whole
season.
You can go the whole season without winning a race and win the Sprint Cup.
Right.
Like, as
right.
long as you're in the lead for points, if you're in top 10, that gets you a certain amount of points. You're in top 5, that gets
yeah.
you a certain amount of points. Leading laps gets you points. So it's very strategic from that standpoint.
What's your opinion of this Trevor Bayne being the youngest driver, considering guys go their whole career to do what he did in this, like, second, you know, sprint cup race? What's your opinion of that?
That's crazy. I know them dudes are salty. Like, it's cats. This cast has been around forever, have not won a Daytona 500. They got to be salty.
Situation where he's not eligible to run for the sprint comp? Didn't I hear something like that?
That I don't know. Like I said, I am an amateur fan right now. I'm not yet an expert. I can't tell you who all the racers are and everybody's style. I can't tell you all of that, but I do like it.
Yeah, I
well,
promise I'm going to give
call,
it a try. Like, I'm gonna, yeah, thanks, Mont. Thanks.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, shout out to Mont. Like, I promise that I'm going to try to give it a chance because I see these, like, diehard fans, and I try, but, you know, no one's ever explained it to me that way either. Like, I didn't realize.
I'm not going front, though. After his first sentence, I was kind of in. Like, you know, he said it was a chess match at 200 miles
chess
an hour.
Match
that is kind of intriguing.
An hour.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
Yeah, when you put it like that, it makes you think, well, damn, the chess match going 200 miles an hour, like, you know. But I never, no one's ever explained it to me that way. So, you know,
me,
shout
I'm
out
more,
to mine. I'm definitely gonna
my
chance.
Speed is more like a checkers match at 200 miles an hour, but I'm you know.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Anyway, the next story, I want to send a rest in peace shout out to N1 baller Troy Escalade Jackson. The brother of Mark Jackson, he died in his sleep at All-Star Weekend. I don't know if we've got any N1 fans out there, but you remember the big guy Escalade used to put in work, so you want to send rest in peace to, you know, Escalade Jackson. So, were you an N1 fan? Have you ever watched the N1 tour on ESPN?
It's human nature, you know. But, you know, since I used to coach, I used to always say N1 was destroying the game. But when, you know, the kids weren't around, you're sitting in front of them going, hype, like, dang!
Yeah,
no, dude, that's crazy, though, because, you know, he's just there to enjoy All-Star Weekend, and, you know,
yeah,
his brother's
yeah,
there,
yeah.
He's a part of it because he's an announcer and everything, and then you got to find out that your brother never woke up from the, you know, the
yeah,
hotel.
Yeah, definitely. So rest in peace to the family,
yeah.
The Jackson family.
Peter Escalade. And I didn't realize, I always yeah. knew he was a big guy. I didn't know he was 6'10".
Yeah. And the thing is, he used to handle the rock. He was like, yo,
yeah.
he's like 6'10", 400 with a handle.
That's probably why I never thought he was 6'10", because he was nice with the handle.
Because he's the handle of the rock, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I guess when you, Mark Jackson, because Mark Jackson, they New York ballers, and he became like a street ball legend, and his brother, like, you know, made it to the NBA, so that's a basketball family. But anyway, rest in peace to him. There's another story I want to talk about that I want to hear your opinion on this, and that's UConn coach Jim Calhoun being suspended 3 games next season for recruiting violations. Do you think that it's not enough, or that the crime, you know, the time he got match up with the crime, so to speak?
Even the greats be cheating. You know, they try to just put it all on the rest of the staff. Like, you know, he didn't know what was going on. But it's one of those NCAA things that we always talk about. You know, even if he's going to get the 3 games, what good is it that he's getting the 3 games next year? Like,
it's a joke.
This is
and
like,
the thing about it is, yo, with college sports, if I was a big time coach, yo, I would coach in college. They protect their coaches, whether it be football or basketball. These guys get caught doing all kinds of illegal stuff, and nothing happens to them. But the players, when they get caught, it's a whole different ball game. Like, this is not his first violation. This is not his first time getting caught doing something. But it's like, yo, 3 games next season, seriously?
And they said he was cited for failing to create an atmosphere of compliance within his program. So, you know, and it's not just the first 3 games next year. It is the first 3 Big East games, but still, man. This is the time of the year, you know, everybody's jockeying for position for the tournament. When would punishment hurt the most? Right now. So if he got in trouble now, then he should be getting punished now. And they also lost one scholarship. They're getting 12 scholarships instead of 13.
If you lose one scholarship, whoop-de-damn-do. In the words of Derek Colvin, whoop-de-damn-do. Here's the thing, though. It's like, for me, this is, like, even worse because it's college basketball. And I'll explain to you why I say that. In basketball, it's 5 guys on the court at the same time. They play offense and defense. So one player can change an entire program. Look at Syracuse when they got Melo. I mean, one player can change your entire program. So when you cheat – you know, you affect a lot. A lot of times these college football programs, you cheat and get one player, it's not going to mean anything.
Right.
You cheat and get a college basketball player, that can change your whole program. Let's say that UConn cheated and Melo ended up at UConn instead of Syracuse. Who's hoisting that trophy up?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's terrible. Yep. Anyway, here's another story. I'll ask you to read the story. It's about your man, Cam Newton, the son of one Cecil Newton. Cam Newton says to Peter King that he sees himself as a football player, an entertainer, and an icon. Now, what's your opinion on that?
Well, we don't believe you. You need more people.
First of all, Cam Newton, you ain't thrown near pass in the NFL yet. So you need to work on first being the football player. See, that's the problem with a lot of the athletes these days. They're so worried about what else they're going to dip their hand into. You know, they're not even perfecting their craft, you know, at hand before they're worrying about all this other stuff. But
yo, he hasn't been drafted yet.
That's true. I'm talking about a pass. He ain't even, yo, the draft ain't even come yet. Yeah, he's definitely tripping. And I heard that actually his mentor, he's working with him, you know, as far as his physical skills and, I guess, matters of the brain, is Warren Moon. So Warren Moon even came out like, Warren Moon was like, yo, pump your brakes. He was like, this is another example of, you know, the cart being put placed before the horse. And like, calm down, guys. Like, there's no super,
yo,
no icons, and come on, man. Come on.
Yo, I'm going to tell you, when I first heard that, you know what I said when I heard Cam Newton say those words?
Come on.
Oh,
test tube, baby.
Yo, this dude, man, like seriously, my thing is, get drafted first. I understand that you want to do all these great things, you know, and in this day and age, quarterbacks, let's face it, are entertainers and icons when you look at the biggest players in football. Most people only know quarterbacks. They know Tom Brady, they know Manning, they don't know any offensive linemen. But at the end of the day, these guys have put in work. You haven't even been drafted yet. I think this, honestly, not that it will, but it could hurt him. Now, depending upon what he does at the combine, if he goes to the combine and he kills it, that's a whole different ballgame. But
going on right now. Hold up, but one more thing about this Cam Newton thing. My thought is, besides, you know, wanting to be an entertainer and an icon, first of all, don't be Jamarcus Russell. That should be your first priority, not to be Jamarcus Russell. So, you know, come on, Cam.
Yo, it's hard to be Jagarbage Russell. Like, Jagarbage Russell, you know, he set the bar pretty low. But people like to compare them, but I don't see him being no Jamarcus Russell. I mean, I really don't. Only time will tell. Now, you told me something I didn't know, which is that his mentor, and he's working with Warren Moon. So that gives me some hope for the young man, because Warren Moon was sharp as a tack.
Yeah.
Anyway, another story I want to talk to you about real quick is about my beloved Denver Broncos. And new coach John Fox has already announced that Kyle Orton is his starting quarterback, not Tim Tebow. First thing is, there may not even be a football season, so I don't know what the point of him coming out now and saying that is. But that's the statement he made.
Only thing I can think of, you know, with the timing of it is maybe he does like Tim Tebow. Maybe it's a motivational tactic, man. You know, I'm always digging deeper, think everybody's Phil Jackson. You know, maybe he's just trying to put it out there because Tim Tebow is a notorious hard worker. So if he feels like he's getting slighted before he even had a chance to compete for the job, then, you know, maybe he'll come out and do better. Or it could just be, you know, John Fox distancing himself from, like, this dude isn't my pick, and he wasn't Elway's pick. So he's not going to, like, hitch his wagon to the Tebow train, and it turned out to be a bust.
Now, here's the thing with him. Here's my opinion of this. Like, when I look at sports overall and the professional level, and considering what happened to Coach Sloan, Jerry Sloan from Utah, it's a situation where coaches are put in a position where they can't develop young players and watch a team grow and grow with the team, so to speak, because their job is on the line, like, you know, damn near every day. So they have this thing where they have to produce right away, and they no longer have the ability to develop a team. So Kyle Horton is a better quarterback right now. We know that. But at the end of the day, where are the Broncos going with Kyle Horton? You're going nowhere.
Depends.
If you look at the build the championship team, you know what I mean? Like, you go with a young guy. But coaches these days are put in a position where they can't develop young talent. PJ, you want to say anything about this, good brother?
Man, I don't know, man. It just seemed like Dev kind of said, maybe he just wanted to get it out there early. It could be a motivational ploy, or it could be that he just wants to deflect any type of quarterback controversy that could come down the pipe early, even though there probably won't be a season. But I think maybe he's just trying to get it out early. I don't know.
It's all for naught anyway, right?
Exactly.
Anyway, those are the stories you want to talk about that happened while you were on the grind.
All right then now. Time to pass that rock. Man, we must be playing like a hoop it up 3-on-3 today. We ain't gonna have
that ball. So we put it up back in the day. So don't front like we ain't put it work at hoop it up back in the day.
Yeah, we got the tapes. I got the tapes. Yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and start it off. Pass the rock. If you haven't listened before, is a segment where we all vent. One by one on anything we want to vent on in the week of sports, or we talk about our favorite headline. So I'm going to vent a little bit.
Tell them why you mad, son.
Yeah, I'm going to tell y'all why I'm mad. Here we go again. If you're loyal listeners of the War Room, you know that my co-host and I have been outspoken about the tomfoolery that athletes of all levels get into on Twitter. Well, we got another one. Last Wednesday, student athlete, Jordan Spriggs, a freshman defensive back at Auburn University, had a paper due and decided it was time to hit up Twitter. He tweeted to his 500-plus followers, quote, "Man, who is good at writing papers? I pay." Shaking my damn head. Really, dude? Really? Probably realizing the gravity of the grandiose idiocy that he just displayed on the web, he shortly thereafter deleted his Twitter account, the whole account. But a few of his teammates got at him first. Teammate Darren Bates tweeted, quote, "You've gone too far, man." And teammate Antoine Carter, no relation to Sean, tweeted, quote, "You got to be the dumbest person in the world, LOL." So do I really have to get into the reasons that I agree with these guys? I don't think so. So I'm going to just go ahead and get this nincompoop my newly minted Moron of the Month award and keep it moving. And with that, I'm going to throw the half court, hoop it up, 3-on-3 pass down on the block to my man P. Jizzle.
Yeah, yo, that story hurt me to the heart, man, because I can't believe how dumb he was. And, like, Twitter, I'm telling you, man, Twitter is the new Illuminati, man, straight up. But I don't know how these cats that we playing put four dudes on, but they got a four team on me, and I see Jimmy cutting to the hoop. So I'm pumping up top, and I'm going to throw a wrap around bounce pass to Jim because I see him cutting to the cup.
Yes, sir. I'll take it from there, good brother. What's up, War Room World? This is Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint, a.k.a. Big Market Jim. And this week, I want to make a quick statement about super teaming in the NBA. Now, my brothers on this show disagree with me, but I must say I personally support super teaming. Yep, I said it. I'm all about the big cities, the big markets, having the best players, and I personally don't give a Marshall Faulk about Cleveland, Sacramento, Indiana, Utah, Memphis, or any small market team stinking. Because your team has horrible management and you can't build a winner the way, say, the San Antonio Spurs are able to, I don't feel sorry for you when your players vote for a different team. I just wanted to put this out there in a public forum, and I want to say that, yes, I'm an elitist. Yes, I'm only thinking about myself. And, yes, I am endorsing dropping feces on a little guy. But another thing is, I'm also being honest about how I feel. There are too many teams, and, yes, more teams will be horrible if this current trend continues. But me personally, I'll continue not to watch them and only watch the teams I feel as though deserve me watching. So shout out to the players leveraging their talents and running their businesses the way they see fit. Yes, these players are businesses themselves. Now, I know that some people have a problem with what I said, but in the words of one CeeLo Green, fuck you. And with that, I take the rock, throw it off the back foot, and get my DeJuan Blair on and dust the rock.
And the crowd goes wild. kind of crowd they got at Hoop It Up? Guess what I'm talking about.
Yo, we had a crowd. Yo, we put in work till we got kicked out for fighting. But go ahead, though.
True. All right, so I'm going to let everybody know how y'all can get in touch with us. Y'all can check out our website at warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us tab to send us a message about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. Yes, we do have them. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on that page. Become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/warroomsports. That's where we do the most of our sports talk, so if you think you can hang, get on the book. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/warroomsports. Subscribe to and become a fan of our YouTube channel at www.warroomsportstv.com. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the war room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you're lazy and you don't want to create an account, just sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts because we know you got them. And while you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Speaking of blogs, check out ours, All Fair in Sports and War, on the blog tab of our website. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so you can listen to the show at any time on your own device. No excuses. Y'all got iPads, iPods, iPhones, you know what I'm talking about. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, and one of us might just call on you. So, fellas, anything happening in the chat room or on Facebook or Twitter before we get...
Well, you know that... Miss Mad, you know, made a couple comments that, you know, she's a Jay-Z fan about us using Jay-Z's lyrics, but, you know, that, you know, as you said, we wouldn't know how much he stole if we didn't listen. But anyway.
We can use his lyrics. We can use everybody else's.
Shout out to my man Mel, a.k.a. Camel, a.k.a. Sean Carter. Anyway, let's talk some NBA All-Star Weekend real quick. You know, I know you guys watched everything on TV. All the festivities, three-point contest, slam dunk contest, and all that. So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Now,
thanks,
first
PJ.
Thing I want to talk about, PJ, here's what I want to ask you about. Did you watch any of the celebrity game?
Nah, that was... Yo, cuz, I turned it on, and I tried, cuz. I gave it like 5 of my most devoted minutes, cuz. And when I saw Justin Bieber out there, dribbling and still shooting from his chest like he's an 8-year-old boy. He ain't get the strength in his body yet to shoot with the ball over his head. And then I saw a little Romeo looking like Maurice Jones-Drew trying to cross people over and going to the hole. I said, yo, man, is this the circus or the Globetrotters, cuz? And then Scotty out there playing like he trying to get another contract. I only gave it 5 minutes, cuz, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm going to funky, though. I watched a little bit of it, and I caught myself having Bieber fever, because when he crossed over Common, I jumped off the couch and screamed, said, damn, like, why you crossed over my man Common like that? Yo, Common will never live that down. And it's funny, because Common said after the game that he's going to be the first person next year to get ejected, because he's going to foul the ball awful hard after the ball crossed him up like that. Hey, Dev, did you see any of that?
I'm a sports nerd, sports noodle. I watched the whole game. I ordered pizza to prepare for the game. I found it entertaining. I'm going to just run down the list. Bieber, like PJ said, he really can't play, but he got lucky a few times, and he actually looked like he could. Romeo was trying too hard to show everybody that, you know, he played for USC. Like you said, Pippen, I don't know what he's trying to do, because I've never seen the actual – NBA celebrities gunning in the celebrity game. Yo, Nick Cannon and Trey Songz are trash truck juice. Common, how do you get a movie where he played an NBA All-Star? FOH. Who else? Rappaport, trash. I'm trying to think of the... Yo, you know who got game, though? The Secretary of Education. The Secretary
yo,
of Education.
Yo, he had a bad pickup game. He had to, like, little ball behind the back passes, setting picks. I'm like, okay.
He wouldn't shoot the ball.
Was he the old head dude? He was the old head.
Yeah.
I mean,
he played D1 ball, though. He played D1 ball. He played at Harvard. He was the captain of the team.
Like, just like Obama.
He was chilling in the Ivy League.
Yeah. It was entertaining. You know, it was a few cats out there trying too hard.
Yo. Yo, shout out to Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen looked like he was trying to get a run somewhere, yo. He's trying to get a run back in the league. Let me find out he's about to join back up with Mike, and they're going to, like, you know, bring the Bobcat.
Do you know what? Scotty was being modest because they kept asking him. He was like, "Oh, I'm going to be a little rusty out there." But people keep forgetting Scotty was playing overseas like 6 months ago. That's always Scotty.
Yeah,
Scotty ran
that hole.
He clotheslined Lil Romeo one time. Lil Romeo tried to come through the hole. He had a flashback and thought that was Joe Dumars right fast and clotheslined him.
No, he threw Bieber's shot.
He threw Bieber's shot and then he hacked somebody hard. I think it was Lil Romeo.
Yo, hold on.
Got the hot block command on the line.
Yo, hold on.
Join us for a little while.
Talking about Trey Songz and Bieber.
Let's move on from that.
Yo,
HBC, what's popping, homie?
MVP. What's going on, brothers?
His team didn't even win. How you get that?
Yeah.
It was voted on. It was like the dunk contest.
Yeah.
They got the fever.
We're going to get to that soon. Let's move on to the next one, man.
Anyway, let's talk about the rookie sophomore game. You guys see that? And shout out to Evan Turner for not even being able to make the damn rookie sophomore game. Anyway.
Couldn't even get a bench look. Damn.
ETK could have run. We're going to have to start.
Evan Turner taking a run? Second pick of the draft. Damn. Anyway, you guys see that? Dev, what are your thoughts on a rookie sophomore game?
Yo, your man for the second year in a row was trying to get that MVP. Dewan Blair was balling like he was with the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals or something with no knees. He's amazing.
Yo, how does he do all that with no knees, yo? He has no knees.
He plays within the system or when he plays with San Antonio, so when he gets to play in a game like that, he gets to show that he got a little skill, so he be going.
Yeah. He got that unassuming athleticism too.
Yeah, because that dunk was crazy. Even though he almost tore up what he had left of his knees when he landed, but
exactly lower back and all that.
Yeah, that was crazy.
So, any other thoughts on that game though? Outside of Dewan Blair, PJ, what do you think about the game?
Not too much. It was kind of what I expected. I mean, John Wall got the MVP. And what he had, like 20 points, 12 assists, something like that. But, I mean, it's not too difficult.
It was the other way around. He had 12 points and 22 dimes.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly. My point was, y'all right. It's not even that hard to really get assists if you try to consciously get it in an all-star game because anybody playing with D. So, I mean, it was all right. I don't really have nothing to take back from it. I mean, what's the name of his cousin was trying to get his job.
I must admit, in terms of John Wall, not necessarily just this All-Star game, he's much more of a table setter than I thought he was going to be.
He averages nine assists.
Yeah, he passes the rock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yo, he threw off the floor, the bounce pass.
Shout out to my man Gary Neal, too, the boy that took the Il-Nana back in LaSalle. He finally made it in the league with San Antonio. He's like a 26-year-old rookie. He actually made the game over Evan Turner.
How you gonna make the game and Evan Turner didn't make the game?
As a Sixers fan and aficionado, I'm embarrassed.
If they went on like the last month of the season, he would have made it, but. He didn't build up enough credit from the start of the season.
Jody Meeks.
I picked Stephen Curry to win the MVP of that game, and Steph Curry didn't do nothing. So, to hell with
it. I don't even know who I picked.
He was fan for the. I think I picked Blake.
Anyway, did you guys see that the shooting stars with the teams from like you know different cities? My man,
yeah,
Fox,
my pick,
and all them.
My pick actually won that, Atlanta. I mean, I didn't pick that with any, I didn't do anything special to make that pick. I took one out of the hat. Let's go with Atlanta. They sound good.
Yeah.
But,
that's what I did with the Texas team.
That was
it looked like Team Texas was going to win.
I think.
Oh, that reminds me, did y'all realize, because remember last week, Tina Thompson was on our birthdays, and all we talked about was her lips and the lipstick. She didn't wear lipstick in the competition. I think she was listening to the show.
Either that, or maybe she went butch. Who knows?
maybe she heard B. Austin talk about fellacious exploitation or something.
Yeah.
She got some. She got some soup coolers on her, cuz she got some soup coolers, boy.
What about the Taco Bell skills challenge? That was embarrassing to my man D. Rose, man.
Yo, not only D. Rose, but Chris Paul missed the layup. How you gonna?
Yo, yeah, Paul. Come on, man.
Chris Paul was high a little
start.
Bit.
He
it looked
came
like
out
he
all.
Yep.
He said he was high.
I think he's a little high. He missed the layup from Jump Street. I said, damn.
Man, them dudes just trying to be so cool. Now, how are you trying to be that cool? Like, you know, you're supposed to be running through the damn obstacle course, and you trying to go be all cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what that reminds me of? That's reminiscent of Larry Hughes embarrassing the Sixers organization in the dunk contest.
In the dunk contest, yeah.
He trying to do the little jog with his thumbs in the air and stuff, and the time running out. Come on.
Yeah,
anybody that do that jog should get the they should get the trash beat out of them. But would you say it's not worse than what?
That's not worse than Shannon Brown embarrassing his whole family at the dunk contest. My man was tapping board.
He embarrassed all the primates.
You're
he embarrassed all the primates in the African continent too.
Remember the time Daryl Armstrong?
Yeah, he couldn't even dunk, yo.
He ran out of town. He just
He whopped real hard because he couldn't even reach the rim to dunk. Yo, I remember he played for Orlando when Shaq and him was there. Yo,
he was in Orlando, yeah. That joke was hard as
fuck. Actually, embarrassed to say it, I don't even remember who won the skills challenge.
Wop, wop.
Yo, it was won by the board.
Wasn't it?
Your man Steph Curry, because Steph Curry had the two young girls that are looking like Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh,
that's right. Steph Curry won that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so he won something.
Right.
He just didn't win what I said he was going to win. Noodle.
Yeah, he was sitting on the bench looking very inappropriate with them young girls, man. Like, he needed to watch that, man.
But he actually was
exactly.
Age, though.
He had him on his lap.
Yo. Now,
the ball looks like the ball looks like he's 15.
Yeah, so
he do. He looked.
The law don't believe
do,
what you
sir.
Look like, good brother. Anyway, let's get into the big boy events, the 3-point contest. What were your thoughts on the 3-point contest?
Yo, I need 30 seconds on the 3-point, John.
You go first. Tell us first how you feel about it, good brother.
Man, certain people should not be allowed in the 3-point contest, man. Like, why do they put Paul Pierce in the John? Even Kevin, I thought.
Paul Pierce
won it last year.
He's a defensive player.
I know he won it, but he looks like he's shot putting.
But see, Paul Pierce, it's his shot too. Like, it's his form. Like, he doesn't shoot fast enough. Like, in other words, like his wind up is kind of slow.
Exactly.
Yeah, his wind up is slow.
And I'm gonna tell you who else. Like Quentin Richardson,
Larry Bird had
a slow
wind up. Larry Bird had one of the slowest wind ups. It was money.
Yeah, but he made all his
jumps.
He ain't missed nothing.
He
ain't never missed
no
jumps. So everything he shot with was water.
Yeah,
but Ray Allen, he got one of the faster jumps. His jump is like a Uzi. Ray Allen be letting them jumps go fast.
Yo, all I got to say about 3-point contest is never bet on a dude named Booby. Come on, man.
Yeah.
He embarrassed. He said I race back.
Yo. When he had that damn haircut, so as he walked out, he lost right then.
That's
it didn't
what
matter
I'm saying, man.
I picked dude to win
that haircut.
I wanted to keep saying the name Booby, and he went out there and embarrassed me. I don't even like
James Jones. I picked James Jones, and he ended up winning. I only picked him because nobody else did.
Yeah, I only picked Booby because nobody else did, and then his name is Booby.
Nobody else still won't pick Booby.
Yo.
Except Keisha Cole. Keisha Cole only wanted to
pick Booby because he liked Friday Night Lights.
Booby Miles.
You want to win, put Booby in. Yo, but anyway, so that's the 3-point contest. Now, let's get into the big one. Everybody, you know, some controversy over the problem. Dev pissed all the props first.
Wow.
I saw Dev tweet that. Dev tweeted about all the props being used. Now, let's talk about the slam dunk contest. PJ, what's your thoughts on the slam dunk contest?
I think the slam dunk contest took a turn for the WWF I will say that with the props, the car, the cape, Mom Duke's coming through with boxes of basketball. Hey, one thing, if we want to talk about the dunks, I was impressed with JaVale because I was not necessarily a fan of the 7-foot dunker because I just think that agility is not there that's needed to, like, contort yourself, for lack of a better word, to make a nice dunk. But he did some pretty creative things. I do think that DeMar, DeRozan,
should have won.
I think that his first dunk, it was a dunk we've seen before, but it was still a degree of difficulty because he was coming from the side. And his second dunk was ridiculous to me. That dunk was nice. Now he did get a 50 for it. He did. I think Blake Griffin won the dunk contest like in October when he made the first dunk in like preseason. So I think he was going to win that. And the fact that it was in L.A., he was going to win regardless. I wasn't impressed with his car dunk. He didn't really dunk over. I think a lot of jokers that we know that can dunk could do that, could pull that dunk off because he dunked over the hood. And he stayed there.
The hood. He jumped over the headlights. Yo. Folded his legs.
You right. He jumped over the front plate.
Yo.
He jumped over the chrome plate in the front of the jump. The master rim.
We all think alike, so we're all going to pretty much say the same thing. We all know people that can do that dunk that won that.
Yeah,
dunk.
Oh, yeah.
We all know
heck
people.
Heck yeah.
Hey, I will say one thing I took away from this. The 7-footers that we grew up watching aren't the 7-footers today because even the boy Serge Ibaka, these dudes are very athletic at 7-foot. It's not like the John Concacs and the Rick Smiths, the dudes. Serge is athletic, and so is JaVale for that matter. Like, these dudes are athletic 7-footers.
He's definitely athletic.
I think 3 inches behind the line.
I think JaVale should have won because his mom kissed Dr. J on the lips.
In the mouth.
Yo, did she?
That was a tongue.
I was licking his lips when she was moving down the table.
Good. Another thing about the dunk contest is, yo, y'all man Dr. J is a hater, yo. He don't like giving tens, yo. Yo, he's a hater, yo. Even when you watch the whole dunk contest that he judges, Dr. J hating on cats.
Serge did a dunk I never saw. And plus, he's 7 feet.
What?
You talking about the foul line or the when he bit the jump?
The foul line.
I'm going to say something very unpopular because I haven't heard one person say anything negative about that, but I was not impressed with the foul line dunk, man.
No?
The fact that we know that they're athletic 7-footers mixed in with the fact that all he had to – yo, he jumped like a foot off the ground and just – he was just long enough to just dunk it. Like, I don't know. I didn't think it was as impressive as everybody else thought it was.
All right. I'm gonna go with Serge. It impressed me, and I'm gonna go with DeMar DeRozan. That last dunk he got a 50 on, I ain't never seen that ever. I ain't never seen that. I don't know nobody that could do that.
The fact that we keep saying what we haven't seen, that's why there's so much pressure on these dudes to do all of this gimmicky stuff and his props, because you got dudes like Kenny Smith always talking about, you got to bring out what nobody's ever seen before. So that's why it's getting real stupid now. You can do something that we've seen, just do it real good. And I don't like the whole
thing. It depends. It depends. Yo, Dev is a straight purist with everything. Yo, he's a dunk contest purist. Yo, for me, I think it's an event. It's not like it's like entertainment. So like the props didn't bother me. I actually found some of them funny. Like when Blake with the car, I was hoping that he dunked and Tupac got out of something. That would have been great to me. But at the end of the day, it's not so much that they're trying to like just do something different. Next year, somebody's going to jump over the choir. That's what they're going to do. But I mean, it doesn't bother me.
It used to be serious, though. It used to be serious. The best players used to do it. Now it is like a sideshow because the best players don't want to be in it. So you just pick like the best monkey bums that you can find.
It's sort of like we had somebody on our Facebook page. I'm trying to figure out who that was that made a comment earlier about the actual guys not wanting to get into it. It's because they don't want to mess up their brand.
I think it was
Kevin G, the guy named Kevin G. Shout out to Kevin G. He was on our Facebook page earlier. He was talking about how the good players don't want to get in these dunk contests and three-point contests because, you know, the fan is so fickle. Like, LeBron gets in a dunk contest and stinks it up. Like, you know, I mean, they're brand
new. It's no fun at all. And I'm not a fan of the whole clock thing. I'm not a fan of the whole clock thing either because the clock – okay, you can do a dunk that would be the most impressive thing that somebody's ever seen, but after I've seen you try to do it 9 times, once you get it down, I'm not really that impressed anymore because I've already seen it.
I agree with that.
I don't like the misses. Yeah, if you missed 10 times and then you pull it off, it's you. All the like excitement is gone. Like the thrill is gone. You know what I'm saying?
Dev's still mad at Nate Robinson.
Nate Robinson robbed my man Iggy. Iggy should have won that dunk contest. Come on, son. Like, yo, Nate Robinson took 76 times to do his dunk, and they still gave him a score because he, you know, because he's vertically challenged.
He
like,
it
come
off.
On, man.
They gave him that. They gave him that score because he wasn't tired.
We have in our chat room, Coffee77 says the entire All-Star game shouldn't exist anymore because they serve no real purpose, and most of the players don't want to be in any of them anyway.
We saw a show.
Now,
Bean wanted to be there.
Yeah, Kobe was like he was a
Jordan Junior.
Hey, let's talk about the actual game.
Did y'all hear that G Wade, his little hating comment a little bit?
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, we could all tell that Kobe was trying to get the MVP from the gate.
I mentioned that to
D-Wade.
I was like, Amari said it too, but he was saying it kind of jokingly. And they said Wade was too. But Wade, of course he's going to say something because he got at least 28 of those 37 points.
All of them was on his chin.
And then he faked a little injury and left because he was tired of getting embarrassed.
Yo, he covered.
Anytime he turned the ball over, he faked an injury, though.
Yeah.
Anytime he's injured, he usually is as after a turnover.
After a
like,
turnover.
I like
D-Wade.
Yo,
I call that doing a Tracy McGrady. Anytime McGrady was like, a couple shots in a row, or turn the rock over, all of a sudden his back would hurt. Like, yo, your back wouldn't hurt. He had chronic back pain
his whole career.
T-Flack is a fraud. I never liked T-Flack. He's a fraud. Anyway, I had to throw that in here real quick. But in terms of the entire All-Star game, Tev, what were your thoughts about the All-Star game?
It was an All-Star game, you know. Dudes not playing D. I mean, in this one, you know, usually in the fourth quarter they didn't even really start playing defense in the fourth quarter. I mean, LeBron had his little moment where he was trying to act for the cameras, where he screaming at the team about let's win and play defense and all that. But that's all a part of his brand, also, Jimmy. He wanted his brand.
Come on, Doug, you gotta appreciate that. You're a marketing guy. You got the NBA in marketing. You gotta appreciate guys protecting their brand.
I like genuine marketing, though.
He said they supposed to be the old team.
Yeah.
We playing like we old. The camera, y'all got that? Y'all get this? Listen.
Y'all getting this? I think LeBron.
Did you hear him say, y'all getting this? He talked with the camera. Said, y'all getting this?
He said, y'all getting this?
I think he played the game
with earpiece in his ear, and somebody from his brand told him, okay, LeBron, it's time.
I agree with all of what y'all saying, and the defense was deplorable. However, when it came to Bean Bryant, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, man, come on.
Junior,
he waits to the biggest moments on the big stage to teach these people that all these dudes running around the league are his illegitimate sons.
He brought his bunnies with him to the game, though. He brought his bunnies back out.
Yo,
he brought his money. He was coming from one side of the paint, coming to the other side, punching it. He levitated on him.
And now the hot block commander is going to make an announcement. I'm going to play myself a little bit, but I'm going to keep it 100. The same reason I hated Kobe for all them years is the reason that I like him now.
Love him.
Yo, man, it's like watching MJ over again, man. It's a little
I'm gonna tell you this.
Yo.
Good. Yeah, it's a little, I'm gonna tell you right now. In my Charles Barkley voice, you know how he always say Blair. He never say player, he say Blair. Kobe Bryant is the most complete Blair in the NBA right now. I mean, he's complete, man. Like
yo,
he's complete. And I'm not coming to this from an All Star game. I'm not saying, oh, look at the All Star game, he's a great player now. No, we all knew he was great. But to me, I didn't even think he still had bunnies. That impressed me. Like, bunnies has nothing to do with your overall game unless you can use them to make yourself better.
But the thing is,
that's my question to y'all.
The thing
he still got some athleticism in him is impressive to me.
That's my question
body,
to y'all.
Oldest trash.
Like, everybody give a definitive answer. Is Kobe Bryant still the best player in the NBA?
Yeah.
Easy to me.
Yeah.
150.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've always said that. I know that all the Kobe haters, and there are a ton of Kobe haters. Yo, it's crazy because the Lakers, naturally just being the Lakers, have a lot of haters because they're the Lakers. And the fact
success
of the matter is,
content.
Yo, Kobe has more haters than any. Yo, Kobe has so many haters. Like, I've never seen anything like this, yo. If you mention anything about Kobe, like, it's just crazy.
One thing that Dad has always said, and he's always been consistent with this, and I will say, is I think a lot of people hate Kobe the person. I don't know that they hate Kobe the basketball player, but they let the hate for the person, Kobe Government Bryant, government named Kobe Bryant, they let that hatred, like, influence their basketball analysis of the guy. So it's tough.
I think I can speak as an actual former Kobe hater. I know for me, it was partly the person, but then number two, it was like my hero was MJ, and like seeing somebody come that close to MJ, I wasn't comfortable with that. I think a lot of cats, they're not comfortable with seeing their hero.
But see, the thing about it is this. It's like, you can hate Kobe Bryant, the person, but the people translate that to his game. Like, yo, Michael Jordan is a horrible person. Always has been a horrible person.
But people don't have that perception of him. People don't know that.
Because he didn't get caught.
I know that. I know that he's fraudulent as a person. He's always been a fraud person, and he got rid of some salary today, you know, because he couldn't afford it. But I mean, at the same time, he's a great basketball player.
Back to that game. I know there was no defense being played, and it was an All-Star game. So Lemmings, don't get it twisted. We're intelligent people. But there comes a moment in any basketball game with any basketball player at any level where pride is involved. And everybody in that arena knew that Kobe was essentially saying, listen, I'm going for mine in this game. Watch me, and what can y'all do about it? So now it's not even about having fun. It's like, yo, this dude is really trying to show the world something. So if I'm stuck guarding, like, I got to really play B. I got to, like, D up. He did it to D Wade. He did it to D Rose. He did it to LeBron. Got caught some of that. Like, one-on-one on the island, he was pooping on cats. That ain't got nothing to do with the All-Star game. That's just the game itself of basketball. Don't get pooped on. And he pooped on.
You saw Friday when LeBron looked like he got shot out of a cannon in the fourth quarter with that dunk when he tried to bring him back. He came down the lane. I said, God, he ran about a 4.140. I said, I ain't got in front of him because they would have got decapitated.
At full speed, don't nobody want nothing from him, man. When he's at full
they
speed,
don't, because I ain't going to hold you. If I was even near the lane, I would have ran out to the three-point line and let that dude do what he had to do. If I was on D, I'd say, go ahead, Kyle, you that serious.
No,
go ahead, man.
No, I was saying in our chat room, Coffee77 said he's nothing like the NBA at all. The best player in the NBA is Sebastian Telfair, so who cares about Kobe? Yo, is Sebastian Telfair in the league?
I agree.
Man, that's pretty funny.
Yo, is Sebastian
man, Kobe is still that dude, man. Kobe is such a finisher though. Like a lot, I mean, there are players. I would say LeBron is probably more athletic than him. Looking at him right now, looking at both of those guys right now, but you talk about the skill set
and
the way
player.
To me, Kobe is complete in the way he finishes. I'm not even talking about his stats in the fourth quarter. But a lot of times, especially in the big games when it counts, and you know, well, all games count, but in the playoffs and as the stakes get, you know, higher, he always, like, he shows up. Like, you, it's
bro,
just something you see him. Because you know how you can see certain people and something in them? I don't know.
He did it last night. He did it last night.
Yeah. Against Portland.
He hit the bucket to put him in overtime, and then he hit, like, the last 8 points of the game to coast him home. Yeah, he's still doing it.
But you know what?
Hey, but you want to take a quick quick commercial break? Let PJ tell everybody.
Yeah, PJ, tell everybody.
We're getting to
this
trade. Get at y'all. So if y'all want to get in touch with us, y'all can check us out on our website at warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company or our show or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on that page. You can become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/warroomsports. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/warroomsports. Subscribe to and become a fan of our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. And join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Speaking of blogs, check out ours, All's Fair in Sports and War, on the blog tab of our website. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so you can listen to the show at any time on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from the phone, just press 1 when you want to talk. Pressing 1 is basically like raising your hand, and you never know, one of us might call on you and let you state your claim. So I'm taking a peek at the chat room. We got people like Miss Mad. I was chatting with her, and she was like, she just hates Kobe. And I said, why? She said, I hate his stupid wife. I hate his game. I hate how he looks. He just went in on me. So I guess, I guess we can call that hating.
His game. Yeah, right. That's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah, right.
Yo, anyway, that's enough about Kobe. You want to talk about any thing in particular? Want to talk about the trade real quick?
Yeah, you want to take this? We got a call on the line, though.
Okay, let me see. Let's see what's popping. 267-432, you're in the war room. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, y'all? This is Billy Beige over from Imaginary Players. What's going on, y'all?
What's going on, man?
Not much, not much. Look, man, y'all can't talk about the All-Star game and forget about my man Kevin Durant. Y'all gave Kobe a whole lot of love, but at the end of the game, the real closer was Kevin Durant.
Oh, man, we love the war room. I thought you were going to say we can't talk about the All-Star game and forget about Kanye West's pants. But that's a whole nother
thing. Oh, my God. This was the nasty thing of the weekend, yo. He couldn't get no change
right
out of his pocket,
man,
if he wanted to.
This is a family show. We can't talk about that on air.
Now, that whole performance just had just so many hilarious things of it, too. Like, I mean, you had Rihanna, who we didn't hear. We just saw her, you know, gyrating her pelvis, which I was a big fan of that. You know, that's the way I like my Rihanna. You had Drake just, you know, pop out of nowhere and just show that, you know, he sounds good on the radio, but every time you see him, you remember that he's the corny guy from Degrassi. Like, I mean, it was a great performance, you know?
No, but you're right. Kevin Durant
NFL, when you look at the NFL Super Bowl, like, yo, that halftime John couldn't touch the NBA All-Star game.
What you have to remember about the NBA, I mean, the NFL one, is that that actually took place in year 2040. So we weren't really ready for that yet. So, like 40 years from now, like, we'll finally get that. That's like a time capsule. You know, we'll understand that in a few years.
Plus,
we're all painted in black.
Plus, the Super Bowl performance didn't have Rihanna's legs. So
yeah, yeah.
game. But Sean, you're right.
Shout out to Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant got major games.
Yeah.
He did. And
he's
honestly,
the
I think. Yeah, y'all were talking about, you know, that closer, and, you know, I think it's going to skip LeBron. Like, I don't think LeBron has that in him, and I think Kevin Durant is going to be the next guy, you know, behind that Jordan, Kobe, and that next guy that just takes it serious, like, that always wants
yeah.
to be the closer and always wants to be the best. Like, LeBron is he's good having fun and playing around, but I think Kevin got some killer in him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that because, like, when you watch LeBron, it looks like he's not serious about being the best. Like, you got a guy like Kobe. Kobe's still working on his game after 5 rings. And Kevin Durant looks like, you know, he puts that work in and he wants to be great. I mean, same thing I say with D. Rose. D. Rose looks like he wants to be great, too.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, LeBron makes it look easy, and I think he sometimes gets comfortable in making it look easy instead of, you know, he could go down to Houston and see the Wizard, too, about some post moves. I don't know what's stopping him. But Billy Bates, thanks for your call, man. We're going to be listening to
you. Yeah, man. I appreciate it. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, shout out to the imaginary players.
Yeah, they're following us. Y'all can listen to the imaginary players at imaginaryplayers.com on Volta or on VoltaRadio.com at 8 o'clock right after our show.
Yeah, but that's a great point. I know Coffee77 is going on everybody in the chat room saying Kobe's overrated, Jordan's overrated.
Somebody is hallucinating in the this guy, Coffee77 is hallucinating in the chat room.
He said
Jordan is overrated.
Kobe overrated? He said Steve Kerr and B.J. Armstrong made the Bulls go. What are we talking about, man? Anyway.
He's sleepy.
Yo, forget the whole super teaming aspect. I know how you guys feel about it. You guys hate the super teaming. I love it. But in terms of all the trades that went down, what are your impressions on the amount of trades, for one, and what do you think was, like, any good move outside? We all know about the Melo trade. I'm talking about the smaller trade. What do you guys think about those trades?
One quick point about the Melo trade, you know, because we talked about it for weeks leading up to it. I actually think the Knicks ended up doing a little better than, you know, what we first perceived before they actually did it, because that Minnesota in the trade actually netted them, you know, they got Corey Brewer back in the trade. And, you know, even from Denver, they got Renaldo Bachman, who was originally a Knicks draft pick. I don't know what Isaiah was thinking. They got Shelton Williams back, so they didn't actually do that bad. So, you know, I just wanted to give them props for that move.
Yo, I'll tell you one thing. When I was watching the game last night, yo, Chauncey looked like the old Chauncey. Chauncey still can ball. Chauncey was like the Western Conference Player of the Year, a couple weeks ago, and he was balling last night. Like, Chauncey
y'all
was not a stop.
Y'all must have forgot.
You think?
People look at Chauncey like he was a throw-in. Chauncey still can ball.
Yeah. You really don't hear his name much in that whole deal. But some of the other ones that went down, yo, the trade wire got busy today.
Yo, it got busy.
I know,
like, go ahead, Dan.
I'm gonna name a few, and then, you know, whichever ones stick out to you afterwards, we can rap about it real quick before we get our guests on the line. But the Blazers and the Bobcats made a trade. So the Bobcats sent Gerald Wallace to the Blazers for Dante Cunningham, Joe Prisbilla, and 2 future first-round picks. The Rockets traded Aaron Brooks to the Suns for Goran Dragic and a future first-round pick. And with Dragic, all I remember is D. Rose making him look
God.
Real stupid
oh,
for jumping.
God!
The Thunder were real busy today.
Yeah.
They got Nazi Muhammad from the Bobcats, and they sent DJ White and Morris Peterson over to them. Shane Battier and Hashim Samshit got traded for each other. The Grizzlies got Shane Battier and Ish Smith. I don't even know who that is. And the Rockets got Hashim Samshit and a future first-round pick. And the Grizzlies actually sent O.J. Mayo to the Pacers, but I think the trade is being called off because they didn't get it in time. Now, how does that happen?
Yeah.
You got like 6 months since the season started to make these trades, and you wait till 2:59 to try to make a trade.
How do you report back to practice after knowing they tried to get rid of you?
I'm like, come on, man. Yo, also, the Celtics, you hear about Celtics supposedly trading Perkins to the Thunder?
Yeah.
The Perkins and Nate Robinson.
They traded
Nate Robinson for Jefferson.
for Jeff Green and Nanette Christie. His whole name is Nanette. That sounds too close. That's a little bit of a shocker because, you know, people in Boston act like Kendrick Perkins is a good player.
Yeah.
I never thought, but, I mean,
yeah, waiting on him. Like, everybody was talking about, yeah.
I'm going to tell you, the greatest trade of today has nothing to do with basketball. It's the fact that Baron Davis got sent to basketball purgatory. It's funny because him and the owner just didn't get along. And if the owner did, like, was coming at his neck, sitting in his stance. So it was like personal.
Hey,
yo,
Jimmy,
remember the owner was sitting
in
his stance, coming at his neck. So
I
what
think
he
the
did
owner
was
in the stands like, yo, man, your beard stinks.
Not only do you send a dude to Cleveland, but this dude was playing in his hometown. You send him, like, yo, to the middle of nowhere. You're like, that's hilarious. That was personal.
They better check the suicide list for Baron Davis, man, and make sure he ain't out, like, walking around bridges and stuff or have any handguns in his possession.
Yo, that was a personal
trade. That one, Jimmy, was Baron Davis and a 2011 first-round pick for Jamario Moon and Mo Williams. And, I mean,
come on,
that's going to get a good pick. Because, you know, if it's a pick, it's going to be a lottery pick.
Yo, come on, man. Yo, that is hilarious. That's personal, yo. That's strictly personal.
Cleveland. The Celtics got a second round, a 2013 second-round pick from the Cavs for they sent them Sima Erden and Luke Herangode.
Harold.
And I don't know. of course, last night, the Hawks sent Bibby, Jordan Crawford, Mo Evans, and a first-round pick to the Wizards for Kirk Heinrich and Hilton Armstrong. That's pretty cool. I think they upgraded at the point guard position because Bibby was, like, running on E. The Warriors sent Brandon Wright and Dan Gadzirich to the Nets for Troy Murphy and a 2012
Troy Murphy's
pick.
Contract. That's what that is. They're going
to the Hornets.
Troy Murphy.
I don't know how the Hornets got to make a deal. They don't need to be owns them. They got Landry, Carl Landry from the Kings, and of course Darren Williams going to Jersey for Derek Favors, Devin Harris, two first round picks. Yo, it's crazy. And then of course the Carmelo trade. And
I wonder if the New Jersey Nets, like, when they made that trade, did the owner, like, get sent the email letting them know the trade was taking place?
From what I heard, they said the bull was like, no, I do not read the mail. I do not use email. I do not use computer. I make billions of money with no computer, no email. I do not use it. That's what I heard the boy say. That's it.
He died.
Yo.
Oh, man.
Yo.
What do you guys think about the future of the Nets, though? Do you think Williams will stay or what?
I didn't hear you say that again.
Did you hear that they ask Avery Johnson, though?
Yeah, what did Avery Johnson say about the trade?
He said, gentlemen, I'm very excited about the basketball trade that just went down for Deron Williams. It's like I told my friend David Robinson. I said, hey, Big 5-0, as long as we play basketball, we can beat any team out there. It's not about the best basketball team. It's about the best basketball team that night. There's nothing that Deron cannot do. I said, this guy plays basketball. He gets me excited. He plays defense. Now, he's arguably the best point guard in the National Basketball League. There's not many basketball point guards better than him. So I was very elated, and I was happy that Prokhorov did that trade and Jay-Z the camo. I was happy with those guys pulled it out.
Yo, that's hilarious. Yo, Slavery Johnson shopping.
Slavery, man. There's nobody like slave, guys.
So do you guys think, you know, because basically the Nets have a year and a third to impress Deron Williams enough to make him stay once his contract is over. And in today's climate, they might not have that because he might put them in a position where
he forced them to trade him before the deadline so they won't just miss out. I'm thinking the Nets might actually end up trading him next year at the trade deadline to the Knicks and try to stick them up for a lot of players just to be spiteful. If they know
what the whole league got you on your conspiracy theory, John. I don't know. I think they might be able to sell him on a whole move to Brooklyn. Depending upon who else they get. Hearing Dwight Howard disrespect his entire team and organization last night. I think he's going to LA. But that's neither here nor there.
He won't be an actor. He won't go out there, get his act on, play with Uncle Kobe.
What did Dwight Howard say, Jimmy?
He was basically saying that he was coming at his entire team, saying that they don't play hard on a nightly basis and the team's not putting them in a position to win. The Otis Smith, who's their GM, he came out and made a statement, which was kind of crazy to me to even say it. And he said that he didn't even try to do anything with the Deron Williams deal because he didn't even inquire to see whether he was available. And it was like a shock to see him get traded. I mean, it was a shock to everybody. It came out of nowhere. But the fact that he came out and said that kind of like pissed D. Howard off because it made him feel like, you know, the team wasn't doing everything they can to win, so to speak. Because when you look at the pieces that they gave up to get Deron Williams, like Orlando could have gave up something similar and put him and teamed him with Dwight.
So how do you think like Jameer feels about those kind of comments? You might like
that. That's a
good
question. Like considering that now you gotta play with these guys.
Yeah, because Dwight also was saying he was like, "Yo, if you're not going to play hard, don't even come out and play on the like. Don't even come out and play. Like don't get dressed. Don't play if you're not going to play hard. Like y'all on some bulls. You know what I mean? So I've never heard him talk like that before. At least not publicly.
Yeah, that's the thing. That was like out of character.
Yeah, that's not. I've never seen him like get like that. I mean, I don't know what he says on the sideline, but obviously saying it to the media, I never heard him do that.
He's sending
a funny. I'm gonna touch on what Dev said. With reference to Jameer, it's like Jameer gets slighted so much that you know I'm a Gilbert Arenas stan, but it's obvious that he isn't what he once was. But cats were talking like, yeah, now that Gilbert's in Orlando, they can just ship Jameer out. Like Jameer's not an All Star caliber point guard,
right?
So.
I mean, but now, if Deron Williams on the table, though, you know, I'll holler at you, Jameer. Hey, B-Off, I don't mean to cut you off, but we got our guest on the line now. So we're gonna bring on our guest now. He's a screenwriter, a director, a producer, and founder of the production company Different by Design. He's going to talk with us tonight about his film Chasing 3000, starring Ray Liotta, which is a story of two brothers' cross-country journey to witness the 3,000th hit of Pirates great Roberto Clemente. So we'd like to welcome him to the War Room for the very first time, Mr. Greg Lenze. Hey, Greg, how are you?
Pretty good, man. How you guys doing?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Good.
How's everything out on the left coast?
I got my fatigues on. Do I need them for the War Room?
You got your fatigues on? Yeah, you might need them. You might need them. So, we're going to get right into it. So we want to talk about this movie a little bit. Now, we know Chasing 3000 was based on a true story, but what was the inspiration behind you wanting to tell the story of these two brothers?
Well, Chasing 3000 was is an original screenplay by Bill Makita. And he and his brother, it's based on the true story of their life. And they lived a couple hours, maybe about an hour, I should say, outside of Pittsburgh. And Bill's younger brother in real life had muscular dystrophy, and they were huge Pirate fans, and it really meant everything to his younger brother, who was in a wheelchair his whole life. It meant everything to him to go to a Pittsburgh game. And to travel like an hour or two was like traveling cross country. I mean, it was a huge endeavor for him and his disability to go to the game.
Right.
And so sat down, and it was also a lot about the relationship between him and his brother and everything he's gone through. And he was like, how do I get this story, this relationship, and the love I have for the brother, and also the difficult emotions that I have in living your whole life with someone who is so, you know, debilitated physically like that. And he put it into a script, and he came out, and he you know, walked around Hollywood with it and got lots of great feedback, and people said this and people said that. But like everything else, they say, you know, thank you, but we're passing. And he happened upon a producer who was a big baseball fan, and so he optioned it. And I, with my production company, had done some business with Ryan. He's a producer that I'm referencing, Ryan Johnson. And so I said, hey, let me take a look at that because I love sports movies and I've written some sports stuff and done other sports things. And we sort of bonded over it. And then I met Bill, and they felt like I was the right guy to do it. So we sat down and took another pass at the script with Bill. And, you know, he certainly did a good job on the first draft, and it was a great foundation. And we did a few more tweaks. And it's something you always do as a director. It's not that you do it purposefully to make the movie your own, but when you read something, you interpret a story a certain way, and when you interpret it that new way, it's often some things might be missing, and so you got to fill in the gaps. And what was great was that Bill and I had a wonderful relationship. Most writers, and I've been on the other end as a writer, you get cut out of that loop. You know, somebody else wants a different movie than script, and the minute you start to object or say, well, what about this and what about that, they're like, you know, we've heard enough of you, buddy. Chump, you're gone, and then they go hire another writer. And
wow.
Because it was
great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Greg, but you just made a point about making the movie your own. And you know, most of us are movie guys, and by the way, this is Jimmy the Worm. Most of us are movie guys, so we understand like how adapting a true story to the screen requires some tweaking and sometimes embellishment. Did you have to make any major changes to the story to make the film like Hollywood worthy? What major changes were there?
I didn't make major changes to make it Hollywoodish. I did work on some things dramatically because in any story you need to have the right kind of drama. There's different kinds of drama, and some dramas play great in a book, and other dramas play great in your memories. But when you're on screen, and I have to, as a director, come up with visual ways and through dialogue to represent the drama. So some of those things I had to play with. But the that I know Bill did before was like, instead of making the trip, you know, an hour, he made the trip across country because we needed the drama of the kids stealing their mom's car and wanting to come after them and the kids having to with fatigue and all that kind of stuff. But that was really – that was kind of it. You know, there wasn't really a lot of stuff that we had to do to sort of, you know, make it Hollywood. I mean, you know, there's bookends at the beginning and the end, and Ray Liotta plays that character who, you know, it's a tried and true, you know, formula for how you tell a story. It's a period piece, is somebody's reminiscing. And hopefully when you do those stories, when you get to the book end at the end, which in ours, I think it works, there's a nice little twist. The movie's not really over until you see the book end, and then you understand how everything happens, resolved.
Yeah, it was an excellent movie. I definitely watch it. Excellent movie.
Yep, definitely. This is Paul, man. I just had a quick question for you. Speaking of Ray Liotta, the movie Goodfellas has played a major part in all of our lives. I mean, I think any of us could act out the entire movie for you right now. We're big fans of Ray Liotta. But what was it like working with him? What kind of guy is he?
Ray was a good guy. I mean, I didn't film with him that much because he's bookended in the beginning and the end of the movie. From a production standpoint, you're always trying to save money. So we actually shot him out 2 days. We had to work into his schedule. And he flew into Pittsburgh. All of his stuff was in Pittsburgh. And we shot like crazy on Saturday. And then he's buddies with Mario. You know, they worked out in Venice at the Gold's Gym here. And so it was a home game. So he took me to the hockey game on Saturday night. And then back on Sunday, we were working like crazy again. And then, you know, we ran into each other again doing ADR, you know, after the set. But he wasn't on the set a lot. You know, he was only on it for a couple days because that's how it works. You know, he sort of earned that right, and that's the value that comes with having him involved in the project.
Got it.
But there was so many actors that were in the show that came out because of who Roberto Clemente was. You know, character actors, people in their 40s and 50s and, you know, even close to 60 who grew up as baseball fans, knowing Roberto Clemente out in it was like one, you know, you're in it for one scene. I mean, there's a lot of actors in Chasing 3000 at one scene, and you don't find them in any other movie doing one scene unless they got cut out, except for that one scene. But, you know, because it's not a role that goes beginning to end and has character arc. They're more, you know, filling a, each scene has its own little arc. And so, you know, all kinds of people stepped up and came out. I mean, there's probably like, I don't know, 12 names that, through the way they negotiate Hollywood, we had to put their names ahead of the title because they've all earned that, you know, that sort of credit.
I noticed that watching the movie, how many people were in one scene. And I actually said something. I said, that's a lot of people, like, that, you know, actors that I recognize.
Yeah.
Who were in one scene. So it's funny you say that.
Well, that's also, that's a credit to our casting director as well as Ryan Johnson, the producer, because when you do a low-budget film, you know, low-budget was a few million dollars, when you do that, they say, okay, well, spend your money on one or two people and then just get no names to fill the rest. And he's like, you know, screw that. I want to get everyone I possibly can. And so he sort of broke the mold a little bit, and that's why there's like 9 or 10 people that are populating. I mean, even the teenage girl on the train is, you know, she was in Lost for a whole season, and the other guy from Desperate Housewives was in there, and, you know, and Emmett Walsh has been in a million movies. He's the old guy farmer at the end, and Michael.
Even the guy, what's the guy's name from The Shield? The guy that plays in The Shield, he was in there as well. He played like the older Roger. Yeah.
Yeah, Jay Carnes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we have Brad. He's on location. Brad, did you have a question for Greg?
No, I'm actually down here at the Verizon Center about to take in the game, the Wizards game. But I'm just happy you were able to make it. What are your plans for future productions? Because I know DX is engaged in some other projects, and will they be sports? Sports themed.
Oh, is he there? I think we might have lost him.
Oh,
Greg?
Right.
We got disconnected. Is he there?
Yeah, I think we got disconnected. So we'll try to
technical difficulties.
Try to get him back on the line. Yeah, we'll just try to get him back on the line.
Yeah, what I was saying is like.
Oh, there he is. Jimmy, you're going to ask that anyway. So, Brad, let PJ just go ahead and ask the question that he had, and we'll just move on from there. But keep us posted with whatever happens in the game. Greg, are you
here?
We'll
do. Great.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, Greg. Yeah, sorry about
that. What was the question?
Sorry about that. Basically, I was going to ask you, based on this film, you know, it's easy for us to assume that baseball is your favorite sport, but we don't want to assume. So what is your favorite sport, and what teams do you root for in all major sports?
Well, the crazy part is baseball probably comes up at 4 in my rank.
Wow.
I played hockey. Played hockey in high school. And I'm a diehard Red Wings fan. I'm all Detroit sports. I grew up in the greater Detroit area, metropolitan Detroit. So I root for every team. I'm in Hayden. The Red Wings are great. The Lions have had their troubles, but I'm a fan of theirs, and I've probably got some good fortune coming to me in the near future here. I'm a Tigers fan. I'm a Pistons fan. But, you know, personally, I enjoy, you know, you can't beat college football, and I enjoy the NBA playoffs. To me, those are the two best times. And I enjoy the NFL playoffs, too, but maybe because the Lions have never been in it in my lifetime.
Hey, man, it's
difficult to fall in love with the NFL playoffs being a Lions fan. But, I mean,
I'm out,
you know, we're
I'm
all
out in L.A. here. You're from Philly. Well, you guys
know. Yeah, we're all from Philly, so, you know. We get into the playoffs, but it ends in agony every year, so we're in the same boat, really.
Yeah, you know, I have to tell you, when the Red Wings beat the Flyers, I think it was about 9 or 10 years ago, in the playoffs, in the Cup, I had a really, really good friend out here in L.A., and the next morning he woke up and he opened his door, and there were a couple brooms there, because we swept them for
all. Those were good Red Wings teams. They were real fast. I remember those teams. That's called for. We're Flyers fans.
He was popping off. That's all. If he wouldn't have set the table, I forget what he did, but he was telling me how they were going to kill us. And so one came, and two came, and three came, and I kept my mouth shut. And I didn't want to say it, so I just used the prop. I used the prop instead of having anything to him.
He's one of those Philly fans that just haven't learned his lesson yet. I refuse to pop off at anybody being a Philly fan now, because we're always like the bridesmaid. So, you know, I'm just going to shut up and let it happen one day. I mean, we got one in baseball.
Don't you? Yeah, you guys have. Don't you guys? Aren't you the city that booed Santa Claus?
Yeah, well,
isn't that Philly?
Yeah,
Santa Claus deserved it.
Yeah, he deserved to be booed.
Yeah.
But Greg, this is Stephen again. We've been doing a series on the show of our greatest sports movies of all time, but we've broken them down into individual sports. So far, we've done greatest baseball movies of all time and greatest basketball movies of all time. So we were curious, since you're a filmmaker, if you had to pick one for both of those genres, and, of course, in baseball, excluding Chasing 3000, what would be your greatest baseball movie of all time and your greatest basketball movie of all time?
Well, if I said that we're going to run the old picket fence and don't get caught watching the paint dry, would you know what movie I'm talking about?
run the old picket fence and don't get caught watching the paint dry.
That's Hoosiers, right?
Dennis Hopper. Hoosiers.
Uh-huh. That's Hoosiers.
That's Hoosiers, yeah.
That's a great movie. I mean, it's really phenomenal movie. And baseball, you know, I mean, I love Field of Dreams. I really, yeah, and I think it's more about so much more than baseball. And it happened to be a Ray Liotta movie. I'm a Ray Liotta fan, but I didn't pick it because it was a Ray Liotta movie. It's just I've always really liked that movie. And, you know, there's other – you guys had your survey, so there's a lot of movies that probably came close, some of the comedies.
Baseball has a lot of great movies. Like, you know, it's funny because baseball has a lot of great movies. Even in the comedies with the Major Leagues and the Field of Dreams, and it's a lot of great baseball movies.
And you want to know the funny part is baseball seems to be, like, the best sport for making a movie about, like, telling a story in the drama, but it's the hardest sport to film.
Why is that? Why do you think that is? Like, why is baseball the best movie, you know, best sport to, you know, make a movie for? Why is that, do you believe?
I don't know. I think it's because baseball is so much, there's something slow about it, and there's relationships, and there's sort of the dynamic of people and thinking and interacting, and I'm really not sure why. I mean, action-wise, it's impossible to shoot because the field is so darn big, you can never get it all on film at once in one picture, in one screen, or it's, everybody's really teeny tiny, whereas in football, you just focus on the line and the quarterback and follow the ball when he throws it, and basketball, but trying to shoot a scene, it takes forever to shoot a baseball scene, and you can shoot a basketball scene faster.
Yeah, well, I just want you to know that we definitely enjoyed the movie. We watched it. It was a good flick. But I have a question. Do you have any projects that you're currently working on, or what can we look forward to, you know, seeing from you?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that in one second, but you gave me an idea with your sports movies. Have you guys done a survey of the worst actor's performance as an athlete in a movie?
No. You know, actually, next week's show is a show on ridiculous sports movies, so we're going to say some of our worst, but...
Let me tell you something.
I'm going to go with Shaq and Shazam.
He said actors acting as athletes, so not athletes, you know.
The thing is, you watch a movie, this just kills me, and you go, that guy's not a football player. You know, like he's running and
exactly
he's...
What you're talking about.
Let me tell you.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Let me tell you if this is in your head. Leonardo DiCaprio playing that basketball player who was the
Basketball Diary.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I almost walked out of the theater. I'm like, basketball player? You got to, you know, and Leonardo's a great actor. But
do you guys know who they had casted, who was originally supposed to play Willie Beeman in, what's the football movie name?
This one with Jamie Foxx.
Any given Sunday.
Jamie Foxx's role as Willie Beeman was originally supposed to be P. Diddy. That would have been...
Oh,
really?
God. Oh, God.
That would have been atrocious. That would have been deplorable.
You know, it's like, put Burt Reynolds in Longest Yard. Okay, I get it. You know what I mean? But some of the people that they cast in these movies. But you're asking about my next project. What's that?
No,
yeah,
I said sometimes
it.
I don't even think they put that thought into it because when you watch the films, you say, what? I mean, a lot of times they pick it based upon who the actor is, but you're right. It doesn't translate to film a lot of times very well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wrote a script as my thesis film, my thesis script in graduate film school at like 93 or 4, and I've sold it a couple times, and it keeps coming back to me, and the reason I can't get it made is because, this is my belief anyway, but it's kind of true. Producers have told me, is it... It's my sort of version of Stand By Me, but it's a sports movie, and it's about three brothers who play football in the 70s in Pittsburgh, and they play in the front yard. It's all-time QB, and there's no adult roles in it. I mean, there is for cameos and for small roles, but there's no lead adult character, and that's what you need to draw the audience in. I mean, how many movies do you go see where when you look at the poster, there's a kid on it, and you go, oh, I got to go see that? I mean, other than, like, you know, the Hogwarts or whatever those movies are with all the kids, but, I mean, those kids are 25 years old and still in high school now, according to the
movie. You know, that's why they make one every year, because they know the kids are going to get too old, so.
Yeah. So, you know, and that, It's about three brothers who play football in the 70s in Pittsburgh, and they idolize, you know, Pittsburgh is like football country, and you know, Joe Namath's hometown is Beaver Falls, and it's about three brothers who play football in their front yard, and they don't have a father, and football is their bonding game, and when they move into this new town, they sort of break apart, and they don't have this game to keep them together anymore. So, you know, so that's what they, that's where the story goes.
Great concept. Like it.
All right. Well, if you ever need some guys doing a sports talk show in your movie for free,
I do it. You guys
are available. We're available.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, the movies, my bad, this is Devin, my basketball movie, I had a three-way tie between Hoosiers, Glory Road, and Coach Carter. And when forced to pick, I picked Glory Road. But, you know, I'm a Hoosiers guy, too. And my baseball movie was Eight Men Out. Really
Eight Men Out was
it.
Good. I'm a huge John Cusack fan. I mean, those two movies you mentioned, basketball, are really good. And there's one movie I saw by Best on Video a long, long time ago, and it was done really poorly, and I'd love to remake the story. And it's Pete Maravich's story.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem,
yeah.
You know, Pete Maravich is one of his years of his high school career ended with, it was the whole issue of race and how the white kids play the black kids and they wouldn't allow it. And so they went and they played like in an empty gym with no one there and no one knew it happened. And it was a whole team of guys that were all like Pete Maravich's level against Pete Maravich. And he had, you know, a bunch of nobodies on his team and his dad was coaching it. And in the last game, they either lost in overtime or he had like a shot at the end of the game from like half court that if he'd have made it, they'd have won, but he hung with them. And so because he didn't win the game, they don't make the movie. That's how it works. I could probably rattle off a half a dozen great stories in life, but because the hero didn't win the last game, it never gets made into a story. If you'd have won the last game, then there's your movie. And that's
how the best stories, though.
Yeah.
Well,
but
Hollywood doesn't buy into that. I mean, there's a great story. You know, Lloyd McClendon coached the Pirates, and he was a baseball player for like 13, 14 years. He was a utility played every position. He was a hero in Little League, and he's in the Little League brochures. He's known as Legendary Lloyd, and he came from Gary, Indiana. It was the first all-black team to play in the Little League World Series, and they were really – I mean, Gary, Indiana is as poor as you can possibly get from a community standpoint.
Yeah.
And he took them all the way there, and in the Little League World Series, every time he swung the bat, he hit a home run. He never hit a foul ball. He never missed it. He never did anything. And he was their pitcher. And the only thing was – the championship game, he was so tired that, like, they went into extra innings. They got to, like, the ninth or tenth inning, and then the other team, like, rocked him for, like, six runs. But,
wow.
I mean, it was just a great, great story. And I had the rights to his life, and no one, you know, would make a movie of it.
Oh,
so one day.
All right. Well, Greg, we are glad that you came on tonight. You're welcome back anytime. We'll definitely have you back on. You want
to
give the audience your website address so they can check out?
Yeah, it's you can go to dxdproductions.com. That's first three letters are David, X-ray David, productions.com.
Okay. So and right now, if anybody goes to our website, worldroomsports.com, you can click on Greg's ad, and it'll take you directly to his website. But we'd like to thank you again. And
Bob.
Until next time, Greg Lindsay, everybody.
Thanks,
guys.
Greg.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Good job.
All right.
I want to go watch some movies now. You know what I mean? I'm ready to go watch some movies.
Well,
anyway,
you're going to have to watch a bunch of movies this week anyway, since next week's show is about movies. You're going to have to watch a bunch of stupid movies, though.
I already have a list based upon some of the stupid movies, but he did bring up a good point, and that is actors translating as athletes. We have a lot of bad examples of that. Anyway, with the rest of the time we got left on the show, you want to talk about some more of the NBA trades or NFL? I don't know, lockout. We got a lot of stuff we can talk about. Where you want to go with this?
We can briefly, probably for like 2 minutes or so, touch on that. The NFL labor talks, and then we can talk some spring training in the MLB. So what have you guys heard about the labor talks? I heard, they've been meeting for 6 days straight, so I guess that's a positive. They have something to talk about.
At the end of the day, they locking them out. They're locking them out.
You said they're still going to lock out?
They're locking them out.
So you prepared for no football, guys?
It's hard. It's hard. You know, I still got that that Eagles Giants comeback game on
DVR.
So I might have to watch that like 46 times next season. But you know, they hired the federal mediator.
The federal arbiter. Yeah.
He said that, you know, very strong differences remain, but progress is being made. So, I mean, think about it. Before they hired this mediator, these guys couldn't even sit down in front of each other.
Right. They wouldn't even look at each other. They was getting in the room back to back. Nobody would look at each other. They wouldn't even talk.
Yeah, because, you know, they have owners. The players made their proposal. The owners got up, gave them an FOH and walked out. A few meets after that were canceled. So at least this guy is making some progress. He got the players and the owners to at least sit in front of each other for 6 days. And I'm pretty sure if you're sitting in front of somebody for 6 days, you're saying something.
Yo, I just want to be – I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. Go ahead, Austin.
The NFL owners group is so powerful, and I think that it's so sad that Gene Upshaw sold the players out for, what was it, 8 pieces of silver? I don't see how the players have any leverage to get a deal done that favors them. That's my whole thing with it. It's like what real power do they have?
Yeah, I mean, the best part about the best part about what the players are asking for is that they're only asking for status quo. So it's like at the end of the day, if nothing really gets done, then you'll just do what you've been doing the whole time, even though that's not really good for the owner. So maybe that's not even realistic, but who knows, man.
I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I think that most of America really doesn't care at this point. I'm not going to say – I know me personally. I don't care at this point because – it really hasn't affected anything. Until it starts affecting, like, the games, that's when I'll be pissed. But right now, when I saw pitchers and catchers report, I didn't really give a rat's ass about the NFL because I was ready to watch the super team, the Philly super team up with their pitching staff. That's what I'm ready to see.
Well, look, since you brought that up, you know, let's get into some spring training. You know, speaking of pitchers and catchers reporting, we know everybody's there now, and, you know, we'll just go through a couple of the stories and anybody chime in with any opinions or anything you've heard about the situation. But, you know, the Twins, Justin Morneau, he's still not 100% from a concussion that he got back in July. This is a baseball game. This isn't a football game. So,
yo,
basically they think he's going to miss pretty much all of the spring training games, and they're saying they're hopeful. Their goal is to get him back April 1st, which is opening day. But they're saying they're just being cautious. But, yo, that's kind of serious.
Man, he's done. Yeah, he's done. Anytime he's still having concussion symptoms, this length.
A year-long concussion.
Yeah, that's
yo,
crazy.
Yeah.
My man, yo, D-Jack came back in like 3 weeks, and he got killed. I saw his spirit leave his body, and he came back in 3 weeks.
That sounds like a movie, the 1 year knockout.
You got to run that by Greg, see if we can get that written. But yeah, I mean, I've kind of been there because what happens to Morneau is when he works out and stuff like that, he starts to get headaches and he feels the effects of the concussion. Then, like, you know, when he starts his day, he feels fine. And I've had a concussion before where, you know, like a long time after the fact, if I'm running or something like that, I don't have to be doing anything that strenuous. You just start to get a headache. So PJ might be right, though. If you're still feeling it almost a year later, man, he might be done.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe he's trying to get out of Minnesota.
His head going to heal up. Once they trade him, or once they get
once
rid
they
of
trade him, he's going to be good money. They're going to trade him, he's going to be good money. Like, okay, cool, I'm cool now.
All right, so
yeah,
news from Chicago.
The story I want to talk about in terms of, you know, spring training is just brought up in the chat room as well, the St. Louis Cardinals and their whole fiasco with Mr. Pujols. I know that B. Austin believes that the market is dictating he should get paid, so pay him. How do you guys feel? I know Austin did say that last week that, you know, A-Rod messed the market up, so give him his dough.
Yeah, I mean, you know me. We spoke about it last week, and, you know, I think 10 years at $30 million per year is too much to pay any baseball player, especially one that's already 31. I'm not paying anybody $30 million a year, you know, in their late 30s and early 40s. But that situation just got worse because their 20-game winner, Adam Wainwright,
yeah,
he's out for the season. He has to get Tommy John surgery. So
here's
an opportunity, though, for Pujols to either get out of there or to actually earn that money. If they're missing a 20-game starter and Pujols carries this team to the playoffs, he might get that $30
million. But, you know, it's like I was looking at this and I was like, I was trying to figure out what teams could possibly pay him. And when I was looking at the way the baseball structure is, like, he really can't make $30 million playing in St. Louis. Because the way baseball is structured with no salary cap,
mm-hmm.
is like you have to pretty much play in one of the major markets in order to make that kind of dough.
Right.
Baseball is it's sort of like real life in a sense. And what I mean by that is if you're a doctor working in Milwaukee and you're a doctor working in Manhattan and you're a better doctor even though you're in Milwaukee, you're not going to make as much as the guy in Manhattan. That's just the bottom line. And because they don't have any kind of revenue sharing and they have, like, the way they have no salary cap, unless you play for the Yankees, Red Sox, or one of these teams, you can't make the kind of dough he's asking for.
Yeah. Well, they do have the revenue sharing, but, like you said, they don't have the salary.
It's not the same as, like, say, the NFL. It's pretty much there's no salary cap. So when you look at it, right, if you look at the top six, out of the top six paid players in baseball, like, five of them are Yankees.
Yeah, but that's just because Steinbrenner is willing to do that. There's revenue sharing. They can pay the money. Most people are not willing to do what Steinbrenner is willing to do. And a
there's revenue sharing. There's revenue sharing, but not out of all the revenue they make. The Yes Network makes tons of money that they don't
have
to share with the rest of the team.
Yeah, they have a pot what they have to share in baseball.
I don't feel that any athlete in any sport should make more than $17.69 an hour. But the fact is that baseball is like the ultimate example of free market economics and capitalism in that the price is set and dictated by what the market is doing. So I definitely don't think he should get $30 million. My problem is the fancy boy A-Rod kind of messed the market up, and everybody's going to follow.
Everybody ain't going to follow. Everybody can't follow,
Exactly. That's my point. Everybody can't follow. Yo, imaginary players in the chat room said that Albert Pujols is 31 in Dominican years. That means he's really about 40.
Hey, but yo, news out of Chicago. This is, you know, there's nothing we have to really discuss in depth. But Ryan Dempster, he's gonna break Carlos Zambrano's 6-year opening day starting streak for the Cubs. So basically, Carlos Zambrano's been demoted down to the number 2 pitcher. He started opening day for 6 straight years, and he was actually lobbying when the decision came down to go for his 7th. So if you've been the ace on this staff for 6 straight years, and then you get spot Brody, like, how would you feel?
I'd be sorry, man, and I like Zambrano. Zambrano will throw a strike at you and then grit on you and start talking trash like he's from Philly. That's what I like about him. But
that's that toughness
they got
that you
Zambrano.
Keep opening day.
Yeah, that toughness. He want to set the tone for the pitching staff. Like, they a tough group of dudes. So he's going to start the road opener, which is whack. I would be mad. I don't know if I would want to, like, lead a squad, but I would be upset. I don't know what Mike Quaid is thinking about in terms of setting the rotation that way for the opening rotation. I'm not sure. And that's what I was wondering about that story. Is it something more to it, or is it just that he thinks that Ryan Dempster gives him the best chance to win that game? Like, I didn't understand it.
You know what? He said he tried to use some kind of excuse. He said that he likes the way that Carlos Zambrano pitches in Milwaukee for some reason. So when his turn in the rotation comes, it's going to be the road opener in Milwaukee. So,
right.
You but that's come on.
That's cat.
Oh, wait.
I like the way he combs his hair over to the right in Milwaukee.
Yeah, like that was fun. All right, but look, because what we want to talk about being from Philadelphia. So I'm going to just run off some more stories, before we get to that. The Nationals' new phenom, because they had a phenom last year, the pitcher, who's actually, he had Tommy John surgery, so he's not going to play this year. But their new phenom, number one pick, Bryce Harper, he says he doesn't want to be limited, meaning,
Minor league.
Yeah, he don't want to be obligated to the minor league just because he's a rookie. He thinks he can hold his own. They're actually taking him. He's going to get a few at-bats in their first spring training game just so he can get some major league pitching, but he's going to the minors. So I'm thinking probably June of 2012 might be the first time we see him in the majors. But they are the Nationals. They could get desperate. Jason Worth. Money. They might get frustrated with him and call up the kid, but I doubt it. So that's one story. Then you got there's not an update on Miguel Cabrera, is it, Jimmy? He's just still drunk.
No, he the team is always stood behind him. Dude got an issue, man. He got to take care of himself.
Yeah.
The
MLB collective bargaining agreement actually expires in July also. I mean, there haven't been talks of, any threats of a lockout here, but could you guys imagine if, all the major sports locked out at once?
People
would have to go get a real life? That's crazy.
The psychiatric wards would be busting at the seams because he wouldn't be able to handle his. Yo, it'd be plenty of damn wives that want to divorce their husbands because they are getting on their ass.
Work, too much time.
Short. Oh,
yep.
My gosh.
Man, I would be.
We would have to take it back to freshman year in college where we watched the same six movies.
Exactly. Yo, freshman year in college, we used to watch Friday and Goodfellas every single day. For 90 days.
We were watching that. And then when the Joan was coming over, flipping to Love Jones.
So the union chief of the Players Association in baseball, he's actually doing a little tour where he's going around to all of the teams and he's talking to the players about, how things are going to go and what they're going to talk about and what they're going to ask for. He's doing this. They cited the NFL and the NBA, said we don't want to get into the position that they're in, so we're going to start things off now, and we're going to let people know, from the door what we're going to do. So.
Yo, y'all catch me at Daytona 500 if that happened, yo.
I know we'd be able to Pocono Raceway.
I'd be at the Kentucky Derby laying my check on some good faith. Left my paycheck.
Shaky butt, laying my check down on
shaky butt.
Real quick before we run out of time, the Phillies, of course, all eyes are still on the Phillies because they got the four pitchers, the four horsemen, the four kings, whatever you want to call them. They got 6 million nicknames.
R2.
Cliff Lee actually had a muscle strain that he's downplaying, saying that he's cool.
Yeah.
What do y'all see from the Phillies this year? We got our baseball expert Brent on the Facebook page asking if the Phillies can hit the 116 game mark. I answered that with one word: no. But
no.
What do you guys think?
That's steep. Yeah, 116.
They killing the Phillies in the chat room saying that the offense is shaky and the pen is shaky and the offense is mediocre now.
Yeah, but when you replace some of that with the kind of pitching that they have, I mean, you might not actually lose a beat because how much offense.
Yo, all they need to do is get two runs a game. With that pitching, man. All the offense need to do is muster up two runs a game.
Yeah.
But my thing is, I get nervous nationally when I hear people talk because everybody is writing us in to the World Series. We're coming out of the National League, and that always makes me nervous because, I like the respect, but I hate the,
presumption. Everybody is just so presumptuous to believe that it's just going to be easy. It's just going to be a wrap. I don't know. I didn't think that the Giants was going to beat us like they did. You know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously we had our hitting issues.
That's what I was telling Greg when we had him on the line. He was talking about his friend who was popping off. Yo, as a Philly fan, I don't care how good the team is supposed to be. I don't pop off, man. I can't.
We've
seen it too many times. I mean, even last year we had three of these four pitchers, and we were supposed to run through the National League playoffs. And, you know, you got your man standing there watching the last pitch of the season go by. Like,
the ugly jokers came from San Francisco with ugly mugs and just beat us, looking ugly.
I don't believe that we are shoo-ins for any championships until Donovan McNabb, a great grandkid, is either dead or out of the country.
Yo, how do we bring Donovan into a baseball conversation? Yo, you might be right, Brad. I don't know. I mean, we have a hell of a pitching staff. I will say that. If everybody even pitches at the level that they, even 80% of what they're expected to, that is a hell of a pitching staff. I will say that. But they do have to get their bats in order, though, man. I mean, like I think our bats is what killed us in the playoffs last year. And at the end of the day, I was exaggerating about
Ryan Howard. I think Ryan Howard is still standing at the plate waiting to swing. You know,
he's still at the plate.
Hey, Jimmy, this was the Phillies' bats after, like, game six.
That's all we got. One goddamn hit. Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
Who's that in the chat room? Holy Soul asked if we had anything on the Mariners. Actually, we're almost out of time, so we're not going to get to the Mariners today, but in a few weeks we're actually going to have our, you know, before the season starts, we're going to have the MLB preview show. So we'll try to get to your Seattle Mariners then, so keep tuning in, and we will get to them. But right now, we're talking about them. But,
Yeah, you brought up a point, Doug, that I didn't even think about, and that's like if all these sports lock out, that would be crazy.
That scared you a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Unacceptable.
That would be crazy.
I heard when I said it, everybody got quiet for a minute, like, stop playing, guys.
I know.
Yeah.
I had to start following cricket, man. I mean, understanding how these jokers.
I don't even know what they do in cricket.
I don't know either. I just had to figure it out.
Rugby.
I'm like, man.
Yeah, but honestly, I do like our pitching staff, but I am very scared considering, like, yeah, I'm still traumatized by Ryan Howard just not swinging at all. Like I said, I think he's still sitting at the plate right now as we speak. You know what I mean? Like, go ahead.
One thing that Jason Worth did bring is that right back in the middle of the lineup that we don't have anymore. So it's kind of like from a hitting standpoint, you kind of want to mix it up as much as you can just so that you're strong regardless of what, you know, the pitching that's coming at you. But we lost that, and I don't know that we're going to replace him. Not that he was great, but he played a part in that squad on that team by being a right-handed reliable bat. So.
Yo, I cannot give him worse because he got him a nice cheek.
Yeah, he did. He got a nice cheek.
Leave Francisco with more time in the lineup since they're going to need that right-hand bat.
Benjamin Francisco.
Yeah,
good thing, man. I don't know.
Shane Victorino.
Sugar Shane. Yeah.
He's a switch hitter, so he'll hit, you know, whatever side you need him to hit from. But Shane, to me, and Jimmy, the year that they had last year, you know, it kind of scared me a little bit. I hope it was all about injuries for him.
His injuries. He got his guarantees. Now, I will say, I think the last time he did that guarantee is when he won the World Series, wasn't it? The last time when he was like,
He tried
it again.
Did he do it last year? Okay, well, here's the deal. All I know is he's supposed to be healthy, but he is older, so we'll see. I mean, we need him.
Yeah.
We definitely need him. So if he's not healthy,
anyway,
or he goes...
y'all, That's enough about that. We running out of time, y'all. So what I just want to say is we'd like to thank everybody for joining us in the War Room this evening. And we hope you'll join us each and every Thursday evening. We also hope you enjoyed tonight's show. We'd like to give a special thanks to tonight's guest, Mr. Greg Lanzi. You can purchase your copy of Chasing 3000 at Amazon.com, and you can keep up with Greg's projects at DXDProductions.com. That's DavidXDavidProductions.com. Check us out next week, same time, same place, and we'll discuss all the big sports topics of the week. We'll also continue our best ever movie series, but this time we won't be actually discussing the best ever. We'll be talking about the most ridiculous damn sports movies of all time. So tune in next week and every week. You don't want to miss it. So until next week, everybody, get money, old ninjas.
Holla.
Spit at me.